About a week and a half ago, I had a message to call a reporter from the News Herald. She was doing an article about 9/11 and was speaking with area clergy. I haven't seen the paper this weekend, and I don't know if anything I said was quoted or even if it was actually quoted accurately, but I wasn't surprised by the call because it's happened several times as the anniversary of 9/11 approaches, and I had a pretty good idea what she'd asked me. Would we do anything special in church for 9/11, and if so, what would that be? And sure enough, when I made contact with the reporter, her first question was precisely what I had expected. I told her we would be doing some special things on this anniversary, but her next question wasn't what I expected. Instead of asking me what those special things would include, her next question was simply why. Why would we do something special on the anniversary of such a terrible day? Her question intrigued me and caused me to think. I know that it's important to remember. I know it's important to pray for our country and to pause to grieve the violence of that day. I know in remembering we are able to be more vigilant in trying to prevent such a thing from happening again. I know all these things. Yet her question caused me to really give thought to the why of what we'll do here today. And the conclusions I came away with surprised me just a little bit. The reporter wanted to know if I would mention 9/11 in my sermon, and I told her that I'm sure that I would. What do you plan to say? She asked. Now, obviously, that reporter doesn't know me and was giving me way too much credit to think that a week and a half ago I would have any clue as to what I would preach about today. I told her as much, and I added that while a remembrance of 9/11 would be a part of our service in some way, it wouldn't be a predominant part. The reason being my own belief that one of the great precepts of that day was a unified determination not to allow terrorism to alter our way of doing things. And I told her that I thought our worship should reflect that understanding. I explained that we use a lectionary and that whatever I had to say in the sermon would be based on the readings of the day. Perhaps it would have been wise of me to have first looked at the readings prior to making such a statement. Because in all honesty, I don't want this gospel lesson to be today's reading. Not today of all days. Jesus is asked, how often should I forgive? Seven times? Not seven times, Jesus says, but I tell you 77 times. It's a gospel about forgiveness. And not just regular forgiveness, but extravagant forgiveness. Why in the world did this particular gospel lesson have to come up on the 10th anniversary of 9/11? And I know what I'm supposed to do here today. I'm supposed to talk about the two together. But I can't. I know what I'm supposed to feel, what I'm supposed to do as a priest of the church, and for that matter, as a person who calls himself Christian. Forgiveness is a cornerstone of our faith. Yet even after 10 years, I cannot stand in this pulpit and tell you that you're supposed to forgive when I can't do that myself. And maybe that's the key. Maybe that's the key to being able to understand the reporter's question of why it's important for this day to be special. It's impossible that it's 10 years ago, isn't it? But at the same time, it seems like just yesterday. I had just started my senior year of seminary, and I was actually skipping class that day because I had a paper due later in the week, and kids don't do this at home, but I had the TV on as I was sat down to begin my paper. I vividly remember sitting there at my desk, fingers on the computer keyboard, not typing a thing, just staring at the TV and realizing that in an instant, the world as we knew it would never be the same. I'm sure many of you had a similar experience, feeling both literally and figuratively frozen, unable to move and able only to watch. I remember that I prayed during that time. I prayed for the families, for the victims, and that there would be more survivors. But I don't really remember praying for much else. Every time someone would mention understanding or forgiveness, I found myself thinking about revenge. Whenever someone mentioned the wrong that had been done to us, I found myself focusing on evil and hatred. And the list goes on and on. I thought about judgment and justice and hunting and tracking them down so that they'd have to pay for what they'd done, whoever they was. I wasn't proud of how I was feeling, but not sure that I feel much differently 10 years later. Forgive. Not seven times, forgive 77 times. I get it. I just don't feel it. Surely there needs to be a loophole for God's sake. And maybe that's the problem. Maybe the problem is that somehow we have reduced the concept of forgiveness into nothing more than hollow words like I'm sorry or I forgive you. Somehow we want forgiveness to be a feeling. And in doing so, I'm afraid that we've lost some of the richness of the way that these first century Jews would have understood forgiveness and why it's such an important part of being in covenant with God. How many times should we forgive? Peter wants to know. What about seven times? Peter probably thought that he was being pretty sharp with that answer, since Jewish law only required you forgive someone four times. No, Jesus says. What about 77 times? And then he goes on to tell a story about kings and slaves, and the point is that the payback in this story is an impossibly huge number and unheard of debt. And the story is easier to understand if we understand the impossibility of that debt. God has bestowed upon us such blessing, such richness that we could never have earned and could never repay. So God forgives this impossible debt, and he expects us to do likewise. To forgive each other as God forgives us is the point of the story. But there's more to it than that. It is the truth that when we forgive another for an offense, we not only free them from whatever debt or offense they may have committed, but we also free ourselves from the burden and the bother of holding on to something that can truly wear us down. You know, the piles of rubbish from 9/11 have long since been cleared away. But can we say the same thing about the rubbish of our hearts and our minds and our lives? I can't. Yet only with such an understanding of forgiveness will what we hold on to bother us enough to ever let it go. We hold on to things to protect us and sometimes to hurt back before we can be hurt again. We hold on to things sometimes because they comfort us, and perhaps we're not ready or not willing to confront whatever issues really are before us. We hold on to things because sometimes letting go is terrifying. It's scary to let go of our rightness, even when such rightness might be justified. But that's what Jesus calls us to do, to let go, to forgive as we have been forgiven. And that forgiveness transforms and heals us and can transform and heal a broken world. I was in New York just a couple of weeks before the attacks, helping lead a youth mission trip where we were working in homeless missions throughout the city. My wife and my children stood in the shadows of the World Trade Centers as they worked at the John Hughes House, which is a mission of Trinity Church. This is a center that not only feeds the homeless, but serves to train and to prepare them to try to reenter the workforce. The John Hughes House doesn't have a big sign or street entrance to identify it. Instead, it's somewhat anonymous, in a basement down an unmarked alley. You have to know where it is to find it. We found out later that debris from the towers, in essence, buried the John Hughes House, and although the staff and the clients were unharmed, they were trapped. It was 3 days after the attacks when the staff heard some activity coming from outside their entrance. A lone firefighter had brought a crew to essentially dig them out and bring them some needed supplies. "How did you know we were here?" the staff wanted to know. And the firefighter told him. He told them that he knew where they were because several years before, when he was down on his luck and without a job, he had been a client of that center. And they'd helped to feed him and to prepare him to become one of New York's finest. And he would never forget where they were. And maybe for no other reason than stories like that is why it's important for us to commemorate such a horrible day. We are called to remember this day, but we're also called to look forward, to see and, if necessary, nudge ourselves into a future that is not defined by the tragedy of that day, but instead shaped by the hope and possibility of God's grace. And maybe, just maybe, that is the place where forgiveness can begin. My friends, in our journeys of faith, forgiveness can be one of the most self-centered things we do. Let me say that again. Forgiveness can be one of the most self-centered things we do. And I don't mean that in a critical way. When we forgive, healing happens. When we forgive, we do not excuse, tolerate, or absolve what has been done. We look evil in the eye and call it what it is. We look and let its horror shock and enrage us, and that's okay. Forgiveness doesn't erase the past. A healed memory is not a deleted memory. Instead, forgiving creates a new way to remember. We change the memory of our past into a hope for our future. Forgiveness acknowledges the possibility of redemption, not only our own, but the redemption of another. And in doing so, we are healed. Did you hear me? We are healed. And find ourselves in a place where we come not to commemorate a wrong, but to celebrate life, the gifts of redemption and the hope of eternity. It is a place where, despite our pain, we can truly find a measure of forgiveness amidst our anger, love amidst our hatred, and grace amidst our judgment. I'm not there yet. I'd be lying to you if I said I was, but I do believe the journey is worthwhile and that Jesus, with his forgiveness thing, really might just be on to something. God love you. Amen.